Welcome to Tea Time. This is a weekly pop culture podcast on the Ringer Podcast Network. I'm Liz Kelly.
I'm Kate Alliwell.
And I'm Amelia Wedemeyer. And today we're checking in with the depths of the internet. That was a good term,
place.
Kaya. Yeah. Chipotle's makeup collection.
Sure.
Exciting, right? Okay. No, or not. And the sisterhood of the traveling pants.
Woo! Yes. So
this
excited.
Will be a really good episode. Before we get into it, follow us on Twitter. We're at teatime_33. And on Instagram, we're at teatimepod. Okay, before we get into the show, let's take a quick break.
This episode is brought to you by eBay Authenticity Guarantee. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee, and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem. Sneakers and streetwear so fresh, every step feels fly. When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things you love are checked by experts. Not just any experts, specialized experts, real people who love this stuff, with real hands-on authentication experience. So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back. Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit anytimefitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details.
Okay, like Amelia said, we're checking in with the devs of the internet, something that we all try to stay away from most of the time, I feel like, but things have bubbled up to the surface, I feel like, that we got to discuss. Really yeah. Odd category, but I'm really excited.
It's meant to be. Yeah.
Okay, I'm going first. I'm covering the corner of the internet that is white millennial women on TikTok. And I feel as though I am an expert in this corner because of my relationship with TikTok. I also am a white millennial woman.
There you go.
And, you know, we're dabbling with retinol for the first time. We're aging a little bit. We're like dealing with like the younger generation coming up on social media and otherwise. And some people are really struggling, especially this very specific facet of the internet, where it's like sing-song theatrical white women on TikTok making diss tracks about Gen Z.
Oh, God.
And they're basically what I think the purpose is to like reclaim, you know, the side parts and the skinny jeans. And you will not take us down. You can't tell me what to do and where. And to which I just say, please stop. It's so embarrassing. Like, it's just, yeah. I hate that I'm in this group of people. So they're like, I got to call out a couple of people, like big creators that are doing this that have really blown up. And if you want like a actually more thoughtful response to all of this, Palmer Hash wrote about it for Insider. So thank you, Kate, for that article. So read that if you'd like. So basically, there's a couple creators I want to call out. Sarah Hester Ross, who I think is like a theater person because she has like a professional microphone.
Fucking aren't they always?
Set up in her house. And she wrote a song that says, "Hey, Gen Z." And she like basically just called out all the ways that they're wrong. And she's keeping all the parts that make her a millennial woman.
Wow.
There's another one, Cassie Smith tried to fight back after Gen Z tried to cancel Eminem. Anyway, this is not new, this conflict. And like, you know, the generations never really vibe with each other too well anyway. But there's this specific facet of like white women who are just embarrassing everybody, all millennials, when they try to do this stuff. Have you guys seen this?
Yeah, the side part is not worth it. The skinny jeans really aren't worth it. Like if we were fighting over something more important, I would be like, okay, like I get it. Like change is difficult, but it's these dumb things that they were like, oh, the side part is canceled. Like I have to make a diss track about it. I can't deal with it. You guys I'm not used to being part of the embarrassing generation.
It's so crazy.
And I would like for it to stop.
Because I wear a side part and I own skinny jeans. I get it. But like at the same time, you don't have to post those things on the internet.
Right. Exactly. And like the kids are always going to be doing something different and always going to be cooler than us. Like that's what aging is. You don't have to wear a middle part. You just have to accept that they don't think you're cool, which is fine. It's just a fact of life.
Exactly. It's not the middle part. It's really that you're uncool. And that's just
there's so many embarrassing sides of like the millennial generation that have been attached to us. Like the word adulting and like the owl phase everyone went through and like every like weird and Harry Potter. It's all being attributed to us and I get it and I take ownership of that. But like, oh my God.
I also have to say it's a little bit difficult because I feel like we went very quickly. There was no in between being like millennials are ruining the world and like millennials are old and embarrassing. Like we never went through a period where it was like millennials are the generation that is in control that are going to fix things. It was like, no, we went straight from like buying too much avocado toast, ruining the housing market to attached to skinny jeans. And I'm like, why didn't we have a moment where it was like millennials know what they're doing?
No, never.
No, I guess we just don't. We never did.
Well, and we'll never get it because we'll only continue to be less and less cool.
It's true.
Oh my God. Cool. That's really depressing.
It honestly is. Okay. What else is going on in the internet?
Well, it's going to get darker. Speaking of, you know, formative cultural texts for millennials, yesterday the first pictures, I guess you could say, of the new Space Jam movie came out. And it was LeBron James. He's the star of the new one. He was on the cover of Entertainment Weekly with all of the, you know, Looney Tunes characters around him. And Twitter absolutely blew up because Lola Bunny has a different design than she did in the original movie. So I clicked on and I was like, why is Lola Bunny trending? The poor person who runs Twitter, who does the Twitter trends or whatever and has to sum up why people are talking about something. So this is what it said under the trend. People share their feelings about Lola Bunny, which is certainly what they were doing. So if you don't know, apparently Lola Bunny was drawn in a very sexualized manner in the first Space Jam movie and was a very important and formative sexual figure, apparently, to people who grew up in that era. Mara Wilson, who is very big on Twitter, tweeted out and said, I once turned on a TV in a hotel in London and Space Jam was on. I'd never seen it. I was busy in 1996. But I said, who's that? My then boyfriend said, that's Lola Bunny. You don't remember Lola Bunny? I said, no. And he said, in a way I'll never forget, I remember Lola Bunny. The reason that people were talking about this is because Lola Bunny has been redesigned. She no longer has the curves of the original Lola Bunny. Mm. She no longer has the crop top, the short shorts. The just overtly sexualized imagery. She has just a regular basketball jersey on. She has been drawn a little more just, you know, not quite as curvy, which
sure.
And just overt, I would say less feminine than the original drawing. So initially
not
the backlash.
For the male gaze.
Right. Exactly. And the original backlash was like from men who were like, they took away an icon of my youth.
Okay.
Lola Bunny. But then the backlash against the backlash started, which was why does Lola Bunny need to be like a strong female woman? Because the person who created Space Jam was like, it's important to reflect the authenticity of strong, capable female characters. I was like, it's a fucking bunny. Like, it's a bunny.
I see.
It's fine.
And see, we can attribute this to millennials again, probably.
Right. And I mean, the answer is always like, we just need to log off. But a lot of people then were like tweeting, being like, Space Jam 2 scene. LeBron James, hello, Lola. You do not make anyone horny. I respect you for basketball. Lola Bunny. Thank you.
Oh, my God.
So then it was like, well, and then, you know, people got mad about making her less curvy because they were like, you know, a woman having curves is not inherently sexual. Some women are just built that way. And again, like, it's a bunny. Like, it's a rabbit.
You know who also has a similar vibe, I think, to men is Roxanne from a Goofy movie. Do you remember
her? Oh, my God. Yes.
And she looks... Is she a human? I don't think... I think she's a dog.
She's a dog, okay, and she has a side part.
See? That was sexy then. yeah. But yeah, I think there are a couple of characters.
I'm going to make a circle back to Lola Bunny discourse during Unanswerable Questions, so stay tuned for that. But I just think everyone who has strong opinions about Lola Bunny, like... I understand we're all bored, but like, just log off. It's going to be fine. Yeah. It's a rabbit.
What's also interesting is someone noted that the image that they're comparing the new Lola Bunny to the old Lola Bunny was actually a fan art, like on DeviantArt.
Oh. Right. It's not even the original. She is very like, you know, sexualized in the original Space Jam, but you're right. All the like side-by-side pictures are not actually of. So, you know, I respect Lola's new outfit. Yeah. Wear what makes you feel good, girl. Like, sure. That's all I have to say.
Sure. Oh my God.
And now the darkest corner of the internet of all.
And again, it plays into the millennial thing because she is, wow, she is a millennial. Okay, this will be brief, I promise. So I just want to talk about someone that I've been fascinated with for a long time. She recently had a piece come out in the New York Magazine, by Rebecca Jennings. It was called Confessions of a 32-Year-Old Drama Queen. And I'm talking about the one, the only, the legend, Trisha Paytas. Who is a YouTuber who rose to prominence in the 2010s after appearing on like a bunch of reality shows. I think they said 30 in this New York Magazine piece.
Wow.
Yeah, she's been on everything from My Strange Addiction to America's Got Talent. You know, she was addicted to tanning. She tried to hold a record for the fastest reader in the world, I guess, speed reader, talker person.
Sure.
Yeah. But anyway, she is, this piece just kind of talks about how she's pretty much uncancelable because she's had so many controversies and she is problematic, but she wears it with pride. And, you know, she's a troll, but not anymore. That's what she said. And I found it interesting because, like, she is. Yes, she is very problematic. But there's a side to her. And they actually kind of compared her to Donald Trump in this piece. But she has this magnetism that I think goes along with being just absolutely vulnerable and saying things that we're all thinking that no one would actually say, but she says them and it doesn't always turn out great for her. But she's compelling. That's what it is. It's like she's so compelling because she always has something to say. She's so weird. I personally think she's doing like an Andy Kaufman bit. She even has it in her Twitter profile. And even in this piece, they were like, oh, all this, you know, you're ironic. And she's like, I don't know what irony means, which is a lie. Trisha paid us. That is a lie. But see, that is all part of her bit. She wants people to think that she's stupid and that she doesn't get it. But I really think she's in on it.
It's a very confusing situation. And I think everyone who follows her, who has any knowledge of her, is also like equally confused. Like we talked about this off mic, but her comments on all of her stuff is like, I love you, but I actually hate you. And then you're so terrible and problematic, but like keep posting, I would die for you. And I just think no one can figure her out. And that's what the piece explores. It's really good. It's just fascinating.
It really is. And I think that is kind of the crux of it is that no one can figure her out. And she is just a wealth of content. She's always giving us something and she's really funny. Like she's very funny. Exactly. And
she's a train wreck.
She's a bit of a train wreck. She's now engaged. She has like publicly talked about how she could never have children because she's had like some like gonorrhea too many times or something.
Jesus.
I don't know. It's but now she's trying to have kids with her fiance Moses. But the way she met Moses was insane, but that is another story. But anyway, she's just so compelling and she's unguarded and she is just everything that I'm not saying everyone wants to be like her, but there's something about her where you're like, you know, I respect that you're so open, even though you're crazy.
And you've been on the Trisha Paytas scene for a very long time. Years ago when we were doing Tea Time, you're like, there's a YouTuber, she's crazy. And we're like, okay. And now it feels like everyone else
over
who didn't
time,
know her
she's,
before.
She's chipped away at us.
Yeah.
Link at a time. Be like, guess what Trisha Paytas did today? We're like, oh, great. Here we go. But now here we are.
She's, now I know about the zeitgeist. Her, I know. It's exciting stuff for all of us fishies.
I was hoping you'd say that. Let's move on to the next category. We're doing relationship news, not worth the tea, and then a little bit of social media. Kate, go ahead.
All right. We're starting with some fun news, some happy news. It's been a while since we've checked in with the U.S. women's national soccer team. An old
Love
tea
them.
Time beat, but I'm still obsessed with them. I still follow all of them on Instagram.
Wow. And so you
refollowed
them?
Yeah.
Because I know you unfollowed them. You've refollowed them.
I unfollowed a couple. I'll tell you off mic which ones I found too boring to follow. But I follow the interesting ones still.
Okay.
And two of those people are Ashlyn Harris and Allie Krieger, who got married last year, I believe. And they just adopted a baby on February 12th. They adopted Sloan, and they have been just a wealth of baby content, just holding the baby, rocking the baby, pictures of the baby, picture their friends with the baby, picture their dog with the baby. And they had really sweet messages about making sure Sloan is like aware of her own culture and raising her in a way that's respectful and like just all these different things and, you know, being a part of the adoptive community. And it's just heartwarming. I just love it. I love them. Love the U.S. Women's National Team. And I'm still obsessed with them.
Normally, I'm dubious of the parents that make their infant children Instagrams, which they have done. Sloan Phillips does fashion. Yeah. But this baby's so cute and the content is so pure. I'll make an exception. Yeah. I would follow immediately.
Yes.
What else? What else is going on?
In other news, the Golden Globes were last weekend. Mm. And, you know, it's been mostly covered on other podcasts on the Ringer Network. Sure. Don't really care about the awards. But Gillian Anderson accepted her award, and she was on The Crown, and, you know, she's on Sex Education. She's on a lot of like British shows. Oh, and she started talking with an American accent while she was accepting her Golden Globe for Best Supporting Actress. And people were like, whoa, an American accent? Gillian Anderson? She was born in Chicago. Her family lived in London for 10 years, and then she moved to Michigan, and she like went to school at Chicago. But like people like did not know that she had American roots. So, you know, people like to talk about stuff on Twitter. They were like, whoa, like Gillian Anderson, not British. Like I thought she was, like, whatever, not a big deal. Enter Alec Baldwin, who was like, accent discourse? I'm sorry, someone has a fake accent? Seems like something that's relevant to my family lately. And he tweeted out a CNN story called Gillian Anderson's American Accent Throws Some People Off. And he said, switching accents? That sounds fascinating. Which, Alec, she is not pretending to be British. She just plays a lot of British roles. She's an accomplished actress. But
why would he enter into that conversation willingly?
It's a great question. And so it turns out Gillian Anderson has a lot of stans from her X-File days and her Sex Education role, which has a lot of devoted fans.
Good for her.
And so they immediately bullied Alec Baldwin off of Twitter. He deleted his account and balance has been restored to the universe.
That's honestly a perfect ending to that story.
Yeah, thank you.
That was great.
Good for
them and
us. Good for the stands, as they deserve. Yeah.
They deserve is right.
All right, next one.
So at first I was like, there's nothing to talk about because the only thing I could find was like G-Eazy has another victim. But then, honestly, divine intervention happened because the Masked Singer dropped a video preview of one of the performances. And when I say it was haunting, I mean, everything about it was haunting. Because a pair of Russian stacking dolls may or may not be, two of the three Hanson brothers, and they sang Shallow in this preview video.
Wow. It's like a Mad Libs of content. Like, pick a noun, Hanson brothers.
Isn't it always Shallow with this fucking show? I mean, there has not been a singular thing that has made sense.
That's true. That is definitely true. So it's on brand for this show. But I will say, you can kind of tell they're running out of ideas when they do these creepy Russian stacking dolls with, like, they have the mouth move and everything, and usually they don't have that. And I guess we should have known when they had, the last time they had a duo that were just owlets in a giant egg, which was just like, that is low-hanging fruit.
Are they connected, or can they move about independently of each other?
You didn't watch the video?
No, I didn't. I'm sorry.
Oh, my God. Okay, well, I'm a little offended. But so they were independent of each other, and they were kind of placed far away, and it was dark, and they put the spotlight on the first one, the bigger one, and he was like, can't tell me something, girl. And then the little one decided to speak as well. And then out of nowhere, it grew legs. It grew legs and it started to move around, like kind of circle around for,
I'm going to have to watch this video.
And you're watching this and you're like, what in the devil is going on? What satanic like cult is running this show? And but even more egregious than this creepy Russian stacking doll routine, they didn't even sing the most famous part of the song, Shallow. They didn't get to the part where she's like, ah, you know, when she's like screaming, you know, that part of Shallow.
Yeah.
They didn't even sing that part. But anyway, I was like mesmerized because this was just everything I could have ever asked for and more. I mean, this freaking, it's just like, oh my, I had so many thoughts. I was just like, here are these dolls. And then one is revealed to be squatting and it just takes it to a whole nother level when you see it sprout legs. And it's just like, oh my God, it's so exciting. At least for me. And then to look at the comments, people were like, well, I would know that voice anywhere. And they were saying, it's the Hanson brothers. And it's just like mind blowing. I'm sorry. I'm so excited for season 5. Okay.
I'm so happy that you have this in your life, Amelia, and that it fuels you in this way because it does. I really am happy for you.
I need this. Yeah.
Next is a little bit of not worth the tea. This is a PSA mostly to Olivia Rodrigo. Please, 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 please stay away from Pete Davidson. Pete Davidson, stay away from Olivia Rodrigo. You both stay away from each other. So we talked about driver's license. That whole drama was Zoe Simmons. She's just been blowing up. She's really awesome. And SNL just did a skit about the song and how like everyone actually knows this entire saga and whatever, all the lyrics. So Olivia Rodrigo is interviewed after because this is an enormous deal. She's just been like exploding recently. And this is kind of like the creme de la creme, I guess, when SNL talks about you, or it was at least. Anyway, so she said, never in my wildest dreams did I think they were going to do a driver's license sketch where they play the entirety of the song, yada, yada. She goes, and Pete Davidson, who is my biggest celebrity crush, was singing it and comparing me to Taylor Swift. It was just insane on my 18th birthday. So it was a crazy day. To which, that's fine, she could say that, but just don't start dating each other. When celebrities like put that stuff into the world, I always think that like some DMs happen or some sliding or some like my people can maybe feel out your people kind of thing. And to which I just say, no, don't, you know, no. Enjoy the fame.
I think that's perfect.
That's it. Okay. And then lastly, also not worth the tea, but this is more fun to talk about. I read this on InStyle and then I did a lot of digging elsewhere, but the makeup company Elf and Chipotle have collabed on a makeup line that is dropping on March 9th. and there's an eye palette and there's a guac face sponge set and a makeup bag and a lip gloss. But I specifically want to talk about the eye palette. this is chaotic as an idea, but like, I was not in those rooms as they were discussing the merit of a Chipotle makeup line. But like, it's so puzzling. So this eye palette, which I have linked, and I hope you all click into it. Yes. You can find it on the Chipotle Instagram account.
Perfect.
It mirrors the lineup, the cafeteria lineup of what you can get in a Chipotle anything menu item. So like lettuce is next to the guac and it's got the hot salsa and the green salsa right above it. It's covered everything. It even covers sofritas, which I love, but I didn't think anyone paid a single fucking mind to that item. Anyway, my problem is just that like they named each color as the actual food item. So like you can put pinto beans color on your eye. And I just think that I'm so confused about all of it, you guys. It's so troubling in these times.
It's the colors aren't that bad. Some of the warm tones, I'm like, I would use these.
Sure.
My only thing is the greens. The lettuce and the guac and the green salsa are like gross greens. They're like, who's putting these on their eyeballs? Not I.
Right.
Sure.
And also, but why in general? You know what I mean? Because Chipotle is so good. And they were obviously, I don't know who they're trying to reach. Maybe Gen Z again? Because what everyone trying to do.
I think you're right. And also I think there's like that element where, you know, they've had like Cheeto collaborations with other makeup brands and stuff.
Oh, is that right?
Like, yeah, they're like, oh my God, I have Cheetos. Like, this is so like funny. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's all I got.
Go ahead.
The only real meat option or like sort of filling option like that they have is sofritas. They don't have beef. They don't have chicken.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. You're right.
Pork.
Which I'm like, carnitas.
Browns are colors that people actually use on their eyeballs. Why did we need four kinds of salsa and no meat?
Why did they do that actually? And sofritas, again, I love and I'm glad it's getting the recognition it deserves, but they could have labeled it chicken and been fine. I mean, that's the same thing. That's bizarre.
That is really weird. Will these make it, like, will the black beans and the pinto beans colors make it onto Beans TikTok? That's what I want to know.
I think I fell off of Beans TikTok because I'm on millennial white woman TikTok, unfortunately. But if you can hear me, TikTok, please take me off of that algorithm. I don't like it.
This episode is brought to you by eBay Authenticity Guarantee. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee, and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem. Sneakers and streetwear are so fresh, every step feels fly. When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things you love are checked by experts. Not just any experts, specialized experts, real people who love this stuff, with real hands-on authentication experience. So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back. Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
This episode is brought to you by NetSuite by Oracle. The less your business spends, the more margin of money you have. I think that's pretty obvious for everyone, but actually doing it, that's easier said than done because the cost of everything is going up these days. So do the smart thing. Switch to NetSuite by Oracle. It's the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth so you can easily reduce costs and headaches. NetSuite specifically helps by reducing IT costs since it lives in the cloud with no hardware required and cutting the costs of maintaining multiple systems since everything you need is on OneSuite. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. See for yourself how effective NetSuite can be and try it out today. And by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/ringer. That is netsuite.com/ringer. This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over two decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner to learn more. Baseball is something else.
Okay, let's keep going. I'm so freaking excited for this category. We're doing cringe mode. The Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants, the classic book series, and then 2005 movie. You guys, spoiler alert, we're going to be doing this today, and then next week we'll be doing the second Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants. So watch that, read that if you like. We did not read these books because we all have full-time jobs outside of the pod. But let's go through this movie. Kate, do you want to take us through the plot?
Yes, I will run us through the plot briefly. Also, I want to clarify, have read the books, love the books, just did not reread the books.
Yeah, me too.
Mm-hmm. Okay, first Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants movie. There are four friends, Bridget, Carmen, Tibby, and Lena, and they're all spending their summers apart. But they've found a magical pair of jeans that fits all of them despite having different body sizes. And so they send the jeans around in all their respective places while they're apart for the summer. And it brings them together. And it's like a sign of their friendship. So Lena goes to Greece. She's Greek. She's visiting family. She meets a really hot fisherman named Kostas, who's just iconic. Chef's kiss. Has a little summer fling. Bridget goes to soccer camp in Mexico, ends up hooking up with a coach. Not great. We'll talk about that. Carmen goes to visit her dad, who walked out on her family long ago. It turns out he has a new white family that she feels very apart from that he didn't tell her about. Carmen has a really shitty summer. We're going to talk about that as well. And then Tibby stays home, works at the grocery store, befriends a young girl who has leukemia, makes a documentary, just goes through a lot, honestly. And they all grow and learn and wear jeans.
Yeah. Perfect. Okay, that was good. Great job. Thanks. All right, let's do the highlights. Kate.
I love this movie so much. I know people are already going to be pissed that we included it in a cringe mode because it's perfect. Again, cringe mode is just shit we want to watch, you guys. Just accept it. We love this movie and we wanted to watch it. And it's from 2005, so obviously it does have its cringy fashion moments, certainly.
Oh, yes.
But I would do anything for a third Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants movie. I loved these books growing up. I love this movie. It's fucking great. And yeah, I just really want them to reunite and make another one. I would just
die for
it. Me too.
And they have been talking about that. I have some info later when we talk about their everlasting friendship. But
all right.
It's not completely dead. But yes, this movie was perfect. I watched it like kind of twice in the last 24 hours. it's just so good. There are so many fantastic moments that have stuck with me this entire time since watching it. A lot of things I remember. Also, I have been searching for a pair of pants like this or any kind of like traveling pants item for basically my entire life since reading this. There's something that is so lovely about this idea that I think I just have been like, you know, looking for a similar item that I have not found anything that has like matched me or in any other friend or sister of mine, whatever. But I just have been searching for these magic jeans basically since I read the book and watched the movie.
Haven't we all?
Yeah, seriously. On that note, I just want to say when they're finding the jeans in the store and they're like, oh my God, try them on. And like, I think a couple of them try them on in the actual, like behind the curtain, you know, in the changing room. And I forgot that Blake Lively and America Ferrera just stripped down in the middle of the store. And I mean, like, it doesn't matter because it's a movie, but I don't know why. I just found it hilarious. I was like, what? Okay, sure. that made me LOL. And also that scene, and I guess Blake Lively's underwear was deemed iconic by Shondaland.com. So there you go.
Really? Interesting. Yes.
This movie has great like granny panties representation. Like anytime they strip down, their underwear is just like the laundry day underwear. And it's just great. It's so relatable. Mm-hmm.
I am so happy you said that. That is so important.
I'm like, yes. Yes.
Also, all of Blake Lively, she's in a lot. I wouldn't say she carried this movie. I think all of them did equal parts, but she has some iconic scenes that have also stuck with me. They make that girl run pretty much everywhere, and her hair is always down, which I can't.
Yep, I have that.
I went on the tirade when we did Amanda Bynes, She's the Man, and they made her play with their hair down, and it drove me crazy.
Can't stand it.
But she's apparently this like all-star soccer player, and she's got this long, down her back, blonde hair. Yeah. Anyway, her running scenes, she's all shoulders. Obviously, Blake Lively is not an all-star soccer player, but they make her try her best to portray that. And she has to run on the sand for like an extended period of time. She like runs in boxers at the end of the movie. It's like a little inappropriate. But anyway, I loved all of Blake Lively's running scenes because her form's not great. And it's just Blake Lively kind of like trotting around. But it like, I don't know. I just loved it.
Agree. I think a part of me is like, I don't know if I'm going to like, or rewatching it, because I hadn't watched it in a long time. I was like, I don't know if I'm going to like this Blake Lively stuff, but I actually really did. And I also want to shout out her, I guess, Greek chorus, if you will, of fellow soccer players. Every time she says dumb stuff, like, he wants me to go to the cantina. And they look at her like she's nuts, but they still go along with whatever she does. You know, at least there are some people in this movie who know that isn't a good idea, but are willing to still, you know, further the plot by going along. And, you know, I just want to shout them out because they seem like great gals.
And the funny thing is, if this was in real life, we would hate this person. If you had someone at camp who's like flirting with the coach as you're trying to better yourself at soccer, and he's like, oh, that he wants you to go. I would hate that girl. But because it's like, you know, she's one of the four and she's a part of this movie, you're like, you love her. No reason.
You're like,
really.
Fine. Yeah, exactly.
Pour the water all over yourself, Blake Lively. That makes sense.
Oh my God, yeah.
That was... Oh.
It's a little over the top, but
that was
I'm
over
here
the
for
top.
It.
Yeah. Well, there you go. And I also appreciate that we have four storylines going here. And personally, you know, my attention span is shot after watching so many TikToks and reels and just, you know, very short little content bursts of video. But anyway, and each of them is so defined and interesting, and I didn't find myself wanting to skip over anything, which again is very, very, I cannot stress enough how rare that is for me nowadays. And I don't, they tackle a lot of stuff in these 2 hours. And it was just, but it was so enjoyable. And I just rewatching this movie made me feel so happy, which is like something honestly I needed because I've hit kind of a COVID wall. So,
your voice like fraying as you said. Really drove it home.
So I really needed this. Like, I can't stress enough. And it was everything I wanted.
100% agreed. Natasha Bedingfield's Unwritten was the piece of this experience I didn't know I needed. Okay, because we have to, let's do some lowlights. Kate.
This lowlight kind of goes in hand with Amelia's highlight, and is also kind of a sneaky highlight. I agree that none of the storylines are bad. They're all like very compelling, but they're a little unbalanced in terms of how these summers get to go. Obviously, like, Bridget and Lena are, like, first of all, they're, like, clearly the hot ones. They get to go to these exotic vacation spots. They get to have these summer flings with, like, really hot guys. Again, like, it's a coach, but, like, we're going to get there. And then fucking Carmen and Tivi, one of them gets to befriend a dying girl, and the other one gets thrown in with a toxic family who doesn't want her. And I'm just like, you couldn't give one of them a fucking boyfriend in this movie? Like, balance it out a little bit.
Completely.
But actually, Carmen and Tivi obviously are like have the best personalities and are like really the most fun to watch. And America Ferrera and Amber Tamblyn are like arguably much better actresses than the other two. So it is fair in that sense. But I'm like, damn, like throw them a bone, give them a something good to go in this summer other than the damn jeans.
I agree. It's egregious, Carmen's storyline. I was like, the dad in that whole situation is just a B. She ends up throwing a brick through the window, which like I honestly get because a lot was building up to it. Like her summer, she shows up to her dad's house. Within like 30 seconds, you find out that he has a female roommate. Oh no, that's actually his fiance. And then he's got two annoying little like white stepkids who are matching in pink outfits. And it's just like horrible. Horrible that he like has accepted Jesus into his life. He's a completely different man. I would be so pissed. And
The problem is that he didn't tell Carmen anything. I'm like, phones existed, my guy. Yeah. Like, you're getting married. She goes to try on the bridesmaid's dress, and the woman's like, oh, I guess he guessed your size wrong. I'm like, well, maybe if he told her there was going to be a wedding and asked her what size dress she wore. I'm like, all of this, poor Carmen, like all of this can be avoided. They deserved that brick through the window 100%.
I agree. I can't remember what happens to her storyline through the next couple books. I hope she gets like a really good summer somewhere, but I can't honestly remember how that works. Okay, next lowlight.
Lowlight for me, at the beginning, they're talking about the rules of the pants. And I believe they stay by this in the books, which is that one of them is that they're never going to wash the pants, which like logistically, no. Like I you know, you're not supposed to wash jeans that often, especially like Madewell ones or whatever. You know, I don't wash my jeans. I probably wash my jeans every couple weeks. And I feel like that's a lot. But like, what if someone spills something? What if, like, four other people are wearing these jeans constantly. They're traveling through the UPS mail system. Like, you have to wash the pants. But canonically, I believe they don't wash the pants. However, the very first person to fucking get the pants is Lena in Greece. She goes out on a fishing boat. She falls into the ocean. She's fucking throwing fish back next to her new boyfriend. And then she sends off the pants back to the other person. I'm like, tell me you washed them. Like, please reassure me that you immediately broke that rule. Just like didn't tell them what you were doing in the pants and wash them. Right. Because like otherwise they're going to smell like fish until the end of time.
Mm. Yeah. Imagine air drying denim with fish and then mailing it for like 4 days. Across
the same clothesline that her grandma's like hanging the octopus for dinner, like just toss the pants up there, be like, it's fine, they already smell like fish.
There'd be something growing in
yes, the 100%.
You know,
okay, so Kate, I know you're like our point person for calling out like this was an unnecessary storyline, it was too sad, we didn't need it, and you didn't comment on this in the outline, so I'm curious, you might disagree with me and I could be wrong pinning this on you, but my opinion, the leukemia storyline with Bailey, the young kid that Tibby spends her entire summer with, is so flippin' sad. And it kind of goes back to like our unbalanced analysis of like these girls' summers where Tibby just gets shafted at every turn. And I think there's this scene where Bailey basically dies in front of Tibby, right? Like she is in the hospital bed. Tibby's right there. She's like, they put a bunch of gray makeup on her and the girl's like, ah. I can't. And then she passes, I think. And it's so freaking sad. I it was a bit too sad for me. I didn't like revisiting that storyline. What are your thoughts?
I mean, I agree that it is very sad. I think part of why I like these books is it's like talking about teenagers, but like they have very adult problems. Like mm-hmm. even Bridget and like, you know, wanting this coach and then like hooking up with him and then realizing that it like wasn't the right time for her and she wasn't ready and wanting her mom and her mom's dead. And like, you know, I mean, they're very uplifting, like fun books and movies, but like they're definitely not lighthearted from mm-mm. a plot standpoint. So I do think mm-hmm. it was really sad, but I like the plot with Bailey overall, I would say. Amelia?
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I kind of, maybe I'm a masochist, but I was like, yeah, bring it on. I want more of this story. I don't know. I just, it was interesting to me. I don't know.
Also, like, Tibby's such a cynical person and like Bailey just changes her and she has hope in the world. And that's like, you know, her whole goal for the summer was to like find the little things and like the people that like you would have looked over. And, you know, she makes a documentary about Bailey and it's sad and it's sweet.
You're right. I think she also does like nods to Bailey later on. You know, mm-hmm. like her story is not completely, not
correct,
no pun intended, but dead. But okay. Anyway, let's move on to what has aged the best and the worst. I don't know if this stuck with you as much as it did me, but not that I quote this like in my daily life, but the line, the scene, I can picture it in my head where Blake Lively is flirting with her soccer coach, Eric. They're running in the sand. Her hair's down. Her shoulders are moving everywhere. And she goes, I play forward. And he goes, so I've noticed. Like, wink, wink. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. The most iconic line in cinematic history. I'm not joking. I play forward, so I've noticed. Are you kidding me? That is, oh. Just so good. I can just see it in my head. I can replay it at a moment's notice. Oh my God. Oh my God.
You know, follow up to that, I think Kostas also has a really good romantic line where he's like romancing Lena and she's like, our grandparents hate each other. And he's like, what do the arguments of old men have to do with us? And I was
that's
like,
a good one. Wow.
Great point, Kostas. They don't have anything to do with us.
That's what this book's also did, was it ignited a little something, something in young people everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love that. It's like... You got so inspired by the play it forward line, and I'm over here being like, oh, did you guys see The Masked Singer with Taylor and Isaac Hanson? The same exact reaction.
We all have our things, Amelia.
It's true.
Something that has aged truly fantastically also is like these women's genuine everlasting friendships. It's so sweet. They did these movies. They did the second one. The third one never came around. But like they've been talking about it even as like 2018, 2019. So it's not over by any means. But these women have all gone on to, some of them have got married. Some of them have had children. They have like bonded through motherhood. And the four of them are just like true, real friends that have lasted decades now. And it is so sweet. They still keep in touch. Their careers have done very different things, but I just love that at the heart of it, these women are actually like really close friends now. And it is extended, mm-hmm. not to really, but like beyond, you know, the books and movies, it's just really sweet.
Yeah.
Especially as Amelia, me and you spend so much time talking about Miranda and Sex and City and these, like that other thing that people kind of, the other set of four women, that's like a really mm-hmm. iconic, that have been broiled in fights and all and drama.
Right.
The great group here. It's sisterhood.
It's that's so true. And I love, I swear there's probably been like a BuzzFeed article being like, oh my God, I didn't know that Blake Lively and America Ferrera were such close friends. Like mm-hmm. five times they were really close friends. And it's kind of like interesting because they're so different, or at least you associate them with being so different, but they're still like really good friends. And she's
And they were such young women when they did these movies, and like mm-hmm. to just be just, I don't know, they're good people, and it's good friendship. So
yeah,
I like it.
Love that.
All right. What is age the worst?
Worst, or I guess this is more of a question. And again, this relates maybe Gillian Anderson. This is a question she can answer. If Kostas lived in Chicago until he was 12, why does he have an accent? Or can you change your linguistic style if you're still young like that? Does anyone know? I need answers.
These are hard-hitting questions.
I totally agree with you. I think they either should have picked a different actor who was less like clearly had lived in Greece, or or made him like move over younger or like be born in Greece, go to school in America, come back to Greece or something. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I'm like, yeah. You can have an explanation for him speaking English that doesn't totally undermine why he is the way that he is. Cause I agree. Right. This doesn't make sense in terms of how he talks and like how his character is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was just very confusing. And mm-hmm. so for the rest of the movie, I was like, I like you, but are you a liar? I don't know.
You can never trust anyone these days. After Hilaria, who knows?
Oh,
who
my knows? God. That's true. Oh, God. And then also, I would say best, you know, I freaking love, we briefly talked about it already, but the soundtrack to this movie is so good. I remember there was a song called BB Your Love by Rachel Yamagata, and it is underrated. It's playing when she and Costas are together or whatever, and it's really beautiful. It's so good. There's other ones, but obviously Unwritten is, like we said, it's iconic. It brings back a lot of great memories. That song was everywhere in 2005. It was the theme song to The Hills. It was in this movie. It was playing all the time on the freaking radio. It's just a great song. It's just mm-hmm. a great song.
It is. It's so uplifting. It just takes you yes. back to a time where life was simpler. I just love it. It's also a really good karaoke song.
Yeah, you're right.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Kate, what do you got?
All right, I have three quick age the worsts in a row. First of all, Blake's extensions. I know that her hair is part of her character. Like in the book, every description, it's like her hair. It's like capitalized sometimes. She like cuts it in one of the books and it's like this huge wow. deal. It's like she's, you know, into a depressive state. The hair is part of her. But the extensions are simply too long. They're too long. I hate that she works out with her hair down. I hate that she's running on the beach with her hair down. Liz got into it. It's the worst. Yeah. Also the worst. Listen. We all love a forbidden romance, but the coach camper relationship just did not age well. And I would yeah. say that it's not supposed to because, again, she like has this realization that it was wrong and like she wasn't mm-hmm. ready, blah, blah, blah. But like they get back together in the books, like she becomes, she goes back to the camp and like becomes a counselor like the next summer. And like they get back together and they both feel bad, but like obviously it works out. So like it's just not yeah. cool. There's a power imbalance, not good. And then one more age the worst. The USPS, the United States Postal Service, these days would never allow this movie to happen. Lena started with the fucking jeans. She took them to Greece. She wore them for a day and then she mailed them to fucking Tibby. They would never get there in the summer. They, unless she spent hundreds of dollars on priority mail, which they appear to. So like they appear to be spending a lot of money shipping these jeans around. But like to get the jeans from Greece to the US, like Tibby would get to wear them wow. and then it would be fall and they would be back together.
Agreed. That's true. We're asking That's the true. Logistical questions, which is important when examining a cringe mode movie.
Indeed.
Okay, let's do MVPs. There's one for me. We all picked differently. I picked a singular person. And that is Costas because we talked about it, but I think he did some little something for everybody. Awakened a little something, everybody. So I can't remember if those two end up together in the book/movie, so we'll have to see. Unfortunately, this guy, Michael Rady, who played him, has just gone on to do a plethora of Hallmark movies, including one that says, "You're baking me crazy," about a food truck. romance, but anyway, this was an iconic role for him, will be cemented in time, and just an all-time great male love interest. Kate, who's your MVP?
My MVP is an image that was taken from the Kids' Choice Awards in 2005, the year this movie came out. And it is the thing that puts the cringe into cringe mode for this movie. It's a picture of the four people that are in this movie. Blake Lively, America Ferrera, Amber Tamblyn, and Alexis Bledel. And they're in the height of 2005 fashion. I also want to give a shout out to Blake Lively's original nose, which is also featured both in this movie and in this picture. Iconic. Love her. R.I.P. And the fashion, whenever we talk about like bringing thousands fashion back, this is the picture I think of. And I'm like, we cannot allow this to happen. We cannot let Gen Z bring this back because it is horrible. The hair, first of all, they're all rocking a side part in this. So shout out to them.
True.
They've got the necklaces. They've got the lace. They've got the low rise jeans. And it's awful. It's just awful. We can't let it happen again. We cannot let history be relived.
Right. This is just begging us to put this on our Instagram. I feel like, Amelia, this is your aesthetic no matter what for our Instagram account.
Will
but
do.
Especially when Will talking do. About this movie. So who is your MVP, Amelia?
I would say this entire cast because I cannot tell you how lovely it was to come back to this movie. And I sincerely enjoyed everyone, like all of the four women, but also the supporting cast I really liked. Obviously, Kostas and the Bradley Whitford as the dad, as Carmen's dad, I loved. And funny, her little soon-to-be stepbrother, Paul, who was in a bunch of Disney Channel movies. He was in Cheetah Girls. His name is Kyle Schmid, and he was Raven Simone's love interest in the first Cheetah Girls.
Oh, album. What?
Yes. Yes.
Wow.
Oh, my yes. God.
The crossover event of the century.
I mean, it's amazing. Yes, he played Derek. And also, he was in other Disney Channel TV movies. And yeah, anyway, it was, you know, so it was great to see. It was like, yay, good for him. He's, mm-hmm. you know. Doing stuff. So, again, yeah, everyone in this cast just really worked well together. And it was just, it's great. I just love it. It's just perfect. Perfect. Absolutely perfect.
No notes. Let's do the lightning round real quick before we wrap this up. So, in your guys' opinion, Kate, you can go first. What is the modern day equivalent of these low rise, medium wash, probably boot cut jeans in your opinion?
Okay. I may have misunderstood this question. I thought it was like, what would be the modern day like thing that we all fit into, basically? And I was reminded of a time when Kaya, Liz, and I all showed up to work in the same black Madewell button down. And Liz and I saw each other in the morning and we were like, ah, look at us matching again. And then fucking Kaya burst through the door like Kramer and was like, ah, me too. So yeah, that's as close as we've ever gotten as a foursome, I believe.
I think me and Kaya have like a lot of overlap in our closet. Mm-hmm. And Kate, me and you like wear the same thing, basically. Every day, so there right. is a lot of yeah. overlap.
Amelia, you know, we're just waiting
style.
For you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
no, I thought yoga pants. Like,
yes, is, absolutely.
Know, maybe mm-hmm. in like this a Gen Z version, they could all just do that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, you can interpret this question a lot of different ways. I had no real sense of what I was asking. I think if you lean into the like impossibility, because the whole thing was like, oh my God, how is this possible? We could do some real stiff denim, high rise, like straight leg, ooh. Light wash situation. and yeah, that would be damn near. I can barely get that on just with my own size. So
exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Next, where would you want to spend the summer out of? Mexico, Santorini, South Carolina, or Bethesda, Kate?
I've been dying to go to Greece ever since I saw this movie. Lena Caligaris is like the OG Santorini influencer. Wow. I know influencers are like all over Santorini now. It's like not good anymore because they've like gentrified it. But she was the OG. She did it first. And I wanted to go there ever since I saw this movie.
Amelia?
I agree. Santorini sounds amazing right now. And watching it, I was like, damn it. But also, I would take Mexico as well.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, this soccer camp was not like the soccer camp I went to over the summer. Mine was in like a motel in Santa Barbara. So I would pick Santorini. Okay, this one's an interesting one. And I know we got thoughts. So match the tea timer to the sister in Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants. Amelia, thoughts?
Well, I got really like, I don't know if galaxy brain is the correct term for this, but I thought about this really hard. And I honestly think out of the times we've done this, none of us really, I mean, I think you can match like, okay, this person is this, blah, blah, blah. But I personally, I think their personalities are so fleshed out and mm-hmm. so like non-stereotypical that they don't really fit into a particular stereotype. Mm-hmm. And they really remind me of someone I know or not I know, but I would be friends with. You know, they just like seem like real people to me. Mm-hmm. I know that sounds kind of weird, but just like, again, this is such a testament to the writers and the actors. And I just want to say again, this is just another way for me to say this movie is flawless. And yeah. I would do anything. I would kill for a TV series to explore more and unpack each of the characters more. I would truly, HBO Max, if you listen to this podcast, please give us a reboot. Please. I would do anything. I would do anything for it.
Agreed. And I'm going to jump in here because my comment makes more sense right after you said that, is I think that there is no, even though we've now, as we've gotten older, realized that Miranda in Sex and the City is like a great character. We should be her with the career, with the whatever. But there's like no real like Miranda as character where no one wants to be that person in the foursome, you know, like it's never an insult to be assigned to any one of those. I think like they give Tibby in this first movie a bad run because she's like edgy and unhappy and cynical, but she's also like badass and very edgy and like doesn't care what people think and all that stuff. So I really don't think if no matter who anyone assigned to anyone, I just feel like there's no bad answer, you know?
Yes, I totally agree. I also, based on like very superficial reasoning, I do have an answer to this question.
Yes, good.
Yeah, go for it.
Based on just like the dumbest possible things. Okay, first of all, I made myself Tibby because in college I was in broadcast journalism and film studies and I was always fucking carrying around video equipment and I was fucking pissed about how heavy it was. And I'm also stuck in my hometown right now. So it just felt right, you know? Kaya, I said Kaya is Lena because Kaya would rather live on the beach and drive 2 hours to work every single day than not live on the beach.
Oh my God.
And she also wears dresses. She wears dresses a lot and she consistently looks more put together than the rest of us.
So true. That's true. That is true. About her.
Yes.
Yeah.
I said, totally. Amelia That's is funny. Bridget because Amelia was a big soccer player in high school, a little hot shot. And Amelia's hair has gotten really long in quarantine.
I That's love this true. Reasoning.
Uh-huh. And then finally, my most just solid choice. I said Liz is Carmen because little known fact, in the next movie, Carmen goes to drama school. And Liz, as we found out in the last episode of Tea Time, considers herself to be a born actress.
Yes. God damn it.
Iconic. Okay. Yeah. That's all I got.
Good. I love good that. Answer. Okay, let's wrap this pod up. Let's do Tea Time's unanswerable questions. If you got thoughts on our questions, you can tweet us, DM us, whatever. Amelia, go ahead.
Oh, God, sorry. I'm just like on a high from Sisterhood of the Drowning Pants.
I know, me too.
Right? Okay, I guess, you know, I went on a walk with my friend the other day, and she is like the most adventurous person I know. She has been to all these national parks, and I was thinking about the national parks, and I was like, oh, my God, the national parks are so... fucking cool. And then I decided I'm gonna Google the national parks because I have nothing else to do. And it just reminded me of all the horrible things the Trump administration did to the national parks. And I'm so glad. I mean, he's done a lot of really shitty things, but this is one of the things that I don't think people talk about enough. But thankfully they're reversing it. And again, you know, not to quote Ken Burns, but you know, America's best idea, the national parks, truly. And I was wondering, do you guys have a favorite national park or maybe a national park you've always wanted to go to?
I love how pure this question is compared to the other two in this segment.
It's so good.
It's really good. My answer is the Grand Canyon. I think it's one of the only ones I've been to. We also have the Indiana Dunes in Indiana, but they're just like giant hills of sand. And I've never really quite understood their appeal.
Yeah, my answer is the Grand Teton National Park. Been there. It's like the Teton Mountain Range, Jackson Hole. You should go. It's like the most beautiful thing I've ever seen in my whole life. Yeah. And it actually reminded me of this cool company I know about, Amelia. And maybe if others are interested, it's called the Parks Project and it's clothing, but they donate a portion of all their sales to like the National Park Association. Ooh, and it's really cute clothes too. Like it's like very trendy, very hip. I've gotten it for like a bunch of people in my life. And so, yeah, it reminded me that, you know, we can do some things to combat.
That's great. Oh my God. I love that. Those are both great answers. I would say personally, I love Arches National Park. When I drove out to, when I moved out to Los Angeles, however many years ago, my dad and I took a detour through, we drove there, then we went through, Utah or whatever. And, if you've ever just wanted to feel insignificant, and I mean that in a good way, just like that you are just like that nature is immaculate and beautiful and scary and wonderful at the same time, just go to a national park, go to Arches. You will feel insignificant. And it's just, it's amazing. It's amazing. The vast beauty of these lands. And it's really cool that, you know, we've designated a decent amount of this country to preserving them. I think that's awesome. I read somewhere we're like the only country who's done that, who's designated like national parks. So, yeah, you know, just visit them because they're so cool. And what a great time, you know, right now.
Agreed. Nature. Between this and all the sisterhood talk, I feel like I'm going to hit stop on my recorder and just like go run a marathon. Like I feel so inspired. I want to get outside. I want to hug you guys. I miss you so much. Agreed.
Okay.
Agreed.
I cannot believe we're about to pivot to sexy cartoon characters again. This is my fault. Okay. Back to fucking Lola Bunny. My unanswerable question is there a Lola Bunny for straight women? And who is it? Basically, like, is there a male equivalent of Lola Bunny who was like just like a sexual being that wasn't necessarily supposed to be or like really shouldn't have been? I asked this on Twitter, had a lot of great responses. By far, the overwhelming answer was Robin Hood, who I get it, but would not have been my choice. I would have gone, I put this in the original tweet. I said the lion from Lion King 2, whose name is apparently Kovu. The bad boy of cinema, as people responded. So a lot of people said Simba or Kovu, sure. A lot of Robin Hood. I think Robin Hood was the overwhelming favorite. And then one person, thank God, did say Spirit Stallion of the Cimarron.
Oh, shit. Yeah. You know, if we're talking Lion King, Scar has a certain toxic energy, I feel like, could draw a lot of people in. Yeah. Did you guys watch Zootopia?
Oh my God. The tiger from Zootopia. Yes. Yeah. Some people also say that.
The backup dancers. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's the hot. Henley. The Henley on the tiger. You put anybody in a Henley and we're going to have problems. Come on.
Okay. Amelia, any other thoughts to add before I ask my random ass question?
Well, I did think when you said, hey, this is my question, I was literally thinking of Robin Hood.
Mm-hmm. That was the overwhelming Fox. Favorite. So I'm happy for everyone who, loved Robin Hood as a child.
Great energy there.
Okay, lastly, I really hope all of you are still listening because I'm really excited to talk about this. Should have just posed it at the top. But this week, the CDC like updated their zombie apocalypse preparedness list, which like is very scary. And then also, I realized and researched that the 16th century French astrologer and seer, his name is Nostradamus, predicted that in 2021, it will be the year of the zombie apocalypse.
What?
And that
book That's what we fucking need.
Published in 1555.
Jesus.
What?
So, yeah, I actually don't have much more back than that because I don't know. But anyway, the CDC has like given out a list of like how to be prepared for the zombie apocalypse, which is like really quite lame. They say, you know, emergency stash of food and water. And then like if you get a zombie bite, just use supplies to treat like basic cuts and lacerations.
What?
Anyway, they were not quite helpful. So my question to the group is, who on Tea Time is surviving the longest in a zombie apocalypse?
Wait, I have a question. Is this like some kind of a joke to them? Because I really don't appreciate it.
I know. We're in such scary times. I only need like facts and like helpful answers. I need them to tell me that this is impossible. But they
thank you.
Well, this immediately makes me think of that tweet that's like, how do people in apocalypse movies have so much will to live? I would simply pass away, which I 100% always feel. I'm like, I don't even like haunted houses. Like if we had zombies fucking running around, I would just like sit in a room and watch Netflix until I starve to death. Like I don't have a better solution
Agreed.
Than that.
I watched like a million seasons of The Walking Dead and they had so much fight in them. And I was just like, what is the point? Like not to be too dark, but I don't have that much will to live. And so I think I would just go ahead and, you know what
just
I mean.
Just give up. It just seems like running
just
away, being
up.
Scared, like
trying to fight.
Yeah. No,
Amelia,
couldn't be me.
I want your answer so bad.
I'm just saying that, you know, now's the time to take all of the illicit drugs and just go out that way. And, you know, I'm not trying to make light because I know there is an epidemic going on, but you know, if
no
there was
time.
One thing to do,
yeah,
there's no better time. See what you're missing, I guess. You know. Right.
So, what's the answer? You think Amelia? I think Amelia or Kaya are obvious answers.
Yeah.
I just can't.
Although
pick
I have
the two
to say, the big cities always go first. So, like Liz and Kaya, done.
Oh,
Amelia
wow.
and I think would have a better chance because we have less people around us. I think we could probably get into the wilderness a lot easier.
Oh my god!
Maybe just like head for the hills, hope for the best.
Head for the hills.
Just outrun it as long. I mean, Indiana has a lot of fucking fields. I don't know.
True. My money's
scary.
On Amelia, I think. She seems like really scrappy.
And her parents
and
her parents are fighters too, you know? We've met them. I like their odds.
Yeah. My dad, we're going to go up next week, actually, and get his second COVID shot. And
there you go.
4 hours. We have to drive 4 hours. And last time we did it, it was 4 hours up to Bemidji, a 30-minute wait, and 4 hours back. That was my entire Friday. So
wow. Good. It's Lyle, right? I like Lyle's odds. Plus, he's vaccinated. So, like, I mean, my parents are vaccinated too, but like, if there's a zombie infestation, like, only the vaccinated can survive. Like, I like their odds
too.
That's
true. Who
knows?
The Kellys are done. Okay. This is a good episode, I think, overall. Thank you so much to our producer, Kaya. I'm Liz Kelly.
I'm Kate Howell.
And I'm Amelia Wedemeyer.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.